In this episode, I'm going to give you an update on UCF kicker Donald De La Haye, good friend of the podcast. There's news right there. Also, LinkedIn, big business opportunity for you that you should jump on before your competitors. And I'm going to break down green screens, when you should use them, and when you should stay the hell away.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Hey-o! All right. So, I've had kind of an eventful week, and I know that it's part of my responsibility to talk to you about the latest news in video marketing and to talk to you about what a whirlwind we're in around here at Wirebuzz. I recently got back from Minneapolis. I was out there for a medical device marketing conference, and three or four of our clients were speaking at the conference. One of them was talking about the power of video marketing as it pertains to medical devices, and we got plenty of shout outs from each of our clients that were speaking, and it was a lot of fun. It was just a really cool opportunity to talk with businesses about what they're trying to do. And ultimately, at the end of the day, everybody has complex business, either devices, products, or services that they're trying to sell. And they all know that if you can educate people faster, they're going to buy faster, right? And the way you educate people faster is through video marketing, right? So super, super cool. I learned a lot. One of the things that I'm obsessed about is opportunity. And when opportunity comes knocking, you're supposed to open up that door and jump on it. So I told you a couple weeks ago on this very podcast about LinkedIn and how LinkedIn was going to be providing its own native upload tool for videos. And I also shared with you the short window of opportunity. Well, on my very device, my iPhone, LinkedIn has already hit me up. And my friends at LinkedIn told me that they're going to be rolling it out slowly and that some of you are going to get it later than others, but some of us, thank you, will get it first. And as such, while I was in Minnesota, I got the tool myself, an update directly to my iPhone. Thank you, iOS lords. And here's the opportunity for each and every one of us to be able to take advantage of this LinkedIn native upload. Let's look at historically what's already happened in the world of video marketing. We started off where Facebook didn't have a native upload, right? You remember those days way, way back, what, a year or a year and a half ago, something like that, in the far off distant past. But up until that point, everybody would take the YouTube link and put it inside of Facebook and it would pull up the video. But then Facebook got wise and it said, look, if we're going to be competing and creating a video first platform, we really need to be creating our own native upload because we know that people will spend twice as long on a website that has a video. They also know that people will spend five times as long on Facebook or Instagram when they're on video. So Facebook created its own native upload, and you know what happened? They did exactly what you and I would have done. If we all sat around and started strategizing about how do you get people to use the Facebook native upload, and actually, how do you get them to upload that video twice? Because they're still going to use YouTube, right? I mean, Facebook isn't going to replace YouTube. It's going to be in addition. So how does Facebook, or how did Facebook strategize back in the day to get all of us retrained? They incentivized us. And as I've shared with you in the past, Facebook gave, if you wanted to natively upload into Facebook, Facebook gave the people that used Facebook properly 268% greater visibility for their videos, greater views than if you use the YouTube link and you put it into Facebook. Well, that's the model right there that LinkedIn is going to be following. So as we are seeing LinkedIn roll this out, and thank you, Strons Vanderplug, for the text that I just received. Strons is our head of video production. He's actually coming back from a shoot right now, and all went well. That's what my text said. So LinkedIn is going to incentivize marketers like you to be using the LinkedIn platform properly. And in order to do that, they're going to retrain us by giving us greater visibility with our videos inside of LinkedIn than if we would use YouTube. Got it? Well, that opportunity is now available to me and eventually to people like you. In fact, Christo, while we're doing this, look inside your LinkedIn app. Let me know in the top right corner. And by the way, I will post for all of you what it looks like inside of my phone and where that button is to natively upload. Christo, do you have in your LinkedIn app in the top right corner, not the camera image, but the video camera or like a movie camera icon that you could click on in the top right corner?
I'm not LinkedIn yet.
He is not LinkedIn yet.
I've not been giving...
You haven't been blessed.
I haven't been blessed.
Okay. So I'll show you guys on the show notes page for this episode, you know, what that looks like. I'll give you a screenshot from my device. So when it happens on yours, I want you to jump on it. And the reason I'm starting off the podcast with this is because window of opportunity. I want you to know that this may be available for 6 weeks, some added visibility, or 6 months or 6 years. It's probably going to be closer to 6 months to a year if you ask me, but it'll be huge for those of you that seize the day and you do it right away as soon as you see that video camera, movie camera icon appearing top right corner of your LinkedIn app. Oh, by the way, it's only on your app when it gets rolled out to you, and it won't be on your desktop when it gets introduced. Does that make sense? All right. Jump on it. Use it before your competitors do, and you'll get larger traction. Cool. All right. So one of the things I think is important for us to share with you this week is I got asked a question when I was in Minneapolis. By the way, that city's just amazing. And a special thank you to my clients that took me out for late night drinks that were so late, I think we got back the next day. And the question was, Todd, you know, how much should we include in our videos? And I have a real simple formula for you, and I think it's vital for you. It's probably the biggest mistake that most businesses make with their videos is they try to jam too much into one business video. In fact, I want you to think like a Chipotle burrito. What they're really doing is they're loading up a ton of ingredients, most businesses, inside of their business video. And just like a Chipotle burrito, eventually it's hard to wrap that whole burrito up. It falls apart. It loses its context. And in the video and in the world of burritos, and I know because I'm a burrito eater, it's very hard to digest those things. So make sure that your video is easy to digest. So not like a Chipotle burrito. You want it to be more like an enchilada. Few ingredients. Easy to digest. Everybody can get through it. And create a second video for the next topic. But don't overwhelm people. Think more like an enchilada. You know, we've got shoots coming up really soon. Shoots in Madrid and in Israel. These are just the international ones. I know that we have a couple of potential projects in Zurich and in the UK, and all over the USA, 1 to 2 shoots happening simultaneously. Pretty damn cool. Speaking of USA, USA, a couple weeks ago, I teased you on this very podcast that a former United States congressman that listens to our podcast and also is a follower of ours on social reached out to me and asked if he could come into the office, wanted to talk about digital marketing and where I see it going, and wanted to pick my brain. And as you know from listening, I'm not really a fan of politics at this point in my life. I don't really see it as being something that people of good character are interested in or even willing to discuss with each other. It's just a really dirty place at this point. The art of deception is the most important game in politics and in news. And I started my career in news, and often that revolves around politics, and have been really happy since I distanced myself. Well, the congressman called the office, and one of the people in our office picked up the phone like they do, I don't know, 100 times a day. and they all get these calls. Hi, this is Congressman John, and I'm calling to tell you about blah, 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 and everybody hangs up, right? Click. Well, we get those calls all the time. Generally, it's a robocall from, well, we're in Arizona, so it's generally a robocall from John McCain, right? And, but this one was from a former congressman. We hung up on him. He called back. We hung up on him again. And when he finally got through the third time, oh man, was he pissed. But he sounds just like an audio recording. Nobody in their right mind would actually think that the congressman was actually calling our office. So good on us for hanging up twice, right? All right, well, the congressman actually came in this last week. That was kind of interesting. And he told stories about being there on 9/11, singing on the steps of the Capitol building when the day when the sun was going down and they came back to D.C. And I remember this congressman coming off of Air Force One and taking a ride in the Beast. Christo, do you know what the Beast is? The Beast, do you know?
I know this one only because he told me when he was here.
Oh, okay. So the Beast is the name of the presidential limousine. And I remember this is, 15 years ago or something like that. But he rode with President Bush, 43, W. Bush. And he got out of the presidential limousine and walked over to me. And he knew me. So he walked up and I said, hey, what was that like? And he goes, the weirdest experience ever. Inside of that limousine, it is so tight that you're sitting there with the leader of the free world. And he said, because I'm a big guy, my legs had to go inside the president's legs because there isn't a lot of leg room. So here I am inside the Beast, looking at the leader of the free world, sharing leg space. And it's a little too intimate, more intimate than you would ever expect. So I always found that interesting. We chatted about it a little bit when he came to our office, and it was a lot of fun for the whole office. Anyway, I've been asked this week, I'll be speaking doing a keynote speech for the American Marketing Association, and that'll be fun. We're just wrapping up that speech, but I'll give you an update later on, probably in an episode or two. I'll give you some information about that. And when you... Oh, this came up this morning in a call with a client who wants to send us in an overseas project. And so as we were having the conversation, the client said, can you use other videos that we've had created by other people and just pull together a really great video for us? And I said, ingredients are really important for us, just as important as it is for an amazing meal. Chefs are particular about their ingredients. You know, we have over 70 clients. We haven't lost one yet. And I'm always concerned when people want me to cook with other people's ingredients. It's not that I don't think that their ingredients are great. It's that every week I'm presented with other people's ingredients and they aren't anywhere near great. And so my name and my reputation is on the line. And I'm getting to the point where I'm learning to mitigate risk and just say no, because you're going to judge me and the quality of my team based on the ingredients and the quality that I'm provided. So I'm not in control, and I'm really not in the business of gambling with other people's money. And I don't think you are interested in hiring me to gamble with your finished product. And candidly, as a listener of this podcast, you already know that there are a variety of different videos, right? Different video types, different ways to set up the backdrop. There's different lighting, different camera angles. Should you look into the camera or look off to the side of it? All of them need to be complementary when you put them into a video package piece. And if you don't and you cut corners, your audience will notice it. So just make sure if your name is going to go on anything, if your company's reputation is at line, which everybody's is when you're communicating with video, you got to make sure you do it the right way. Because if you don't, you're going to end up having to do it twice. And I would rather not gamble with somebody else's money. I'd rather control the ingredients and make sure I provide something that is amazing. If you want to get access to that story, just go to the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/110. That's right, wirebuzz.com/110. Good friend of the podcast appeared all over the national news this week. Sports Illustrated reports University of Central Florida kicker Donald De La Haye. Now, you may remember Donald De La Haye is the kicker, right, from UCF. And I told you that in a past episode that Donald was got into a little problem with his athletic department at UCF because he was posting videos about what it's like to be a college football athlete. And his videos are wildly entertaining. To give you an example, he posted a video that shows what it's like to be a college football player doing your house chores. And as he's doing his house chores, you can see him hiking his laundry into the washing machine. Right. And then when it comes out, he's running it over to the dryer and, you know, kind of pushing it in. So he's doing all these home activities with the same athleticism that a football player would do, or he's throwing things from one side of the room to the other. Really entertaining video marketer. And he's just got the young passion for it. Well, he's made a little bit of money in advertising off of his videos. And when I say a little, he told me what that amount is and didn't tell me that I could say it publicly. Oh, how did he tell me? Well, the week after I told you on this podcast about Donald De La Haye, Donald was sitting next to me on my cross-country flight on Southwest. And we started talking, and before we realized it, I had just done a story about him. Well, to bring you up to speed, UFC kicker Donald De La Haye has been ruled ineligible after he refused to give in to the NCAA's demand for him to stop monetizing his popular YouTube channel. Now, Donald is a junior kickoff specialist. He has a YouTube channel with over 90,000 subscribers, right? And has amassed nearly 5 million video views. To give you an idea what 5 million video views looks like, our breast cancer awareness campaign is in the 13 million range, breast cancer answers on multiple platforms. And we have a huge audience that we're educating. The NCAA took issue with the fact that the videos bring in advertising revenue and said he was no longer allowed to make money off of his athletics-related videos if he wanted to continue playing college football. UFC lobbied the NCAA to allow De La Haye to continue to profit from his channel, and provided he did not collect any revenue from the videos related to athletics. Well, I do know that Donald is out of school, and that phase in his life is over. He's looking for work. He's somebody that Wirebuzz would be very interested in if he wasn't on the other side of the country. And it's really sad to see that somebody who absolutely loves video marketing isn't able to enjoy his passion and play football at the same time. Kind of makes me really sad. Great kid, loves his school, appreciates his teammates more than you would ever know, and loves video marketing like you and I do. All right, so I was approached by this jumbo big box store, you know, one of the biggest retail stores in the world. And they saw me speak in New York City at SMX East. And then about nine, and they approached me and they said, we've got a problem. And they shared it with me. And then 9 months later, I'm speaking at SMX West in San Jose. And when I get off the podium, there's a text message from them that says, hey, it's so-and-so from Big Box Store. Can we talk? We'd love to meet you for a beer. And that's like a done deal. So I went and had a beer with them and they laid out their problem, which I'm going to share with you right now. So they have two problems. The first problem is their search results are so bad at this time, this is a couple years ago, that if you were in your, if you went onto Google and you typed in their name and your home zip code, you would only get their competitors, okay? You wouldn't find them at all. And you'd get their competitors' telephone number under their search listing and their competitors' address and a link to their competitors' website. That's a big problem, right? They said the problem was so big that everybody on their SEO team had moved their kids from private school into public school because they're all expecting to get canned. The second problem was that they had 20,000 videos too many for YouTube. Those videos were costing them $40,000 a month to serve up to their audience, right? So as I started having a conversation with them, you know, YouTube would only allow 999 videos per channel. So what we did, and what Wirebuzz did, is we tackled both these problems separately. I'm going to start with the second problem, which is the videos that were costing them $40,000 a month. We just created a separate channel for each department in their big box store. So if this big box store, just for the sake of discussion, and I'm not isolating any client, if this client was a hardware store, we would separate the plumbing aisle from the electrical section, because somebody who's looking for plumbing doesn't need to sift through hundreds and hundreds of videos from electrical in order to find what they're looking for. Does that make sense? And in doing so, they saved $40,000 a month just like that. And the next problem, which was about the SEO. Okay, now this one's actually a really funny story. It's funny if your kids aren't in public school because you're about to get S-canned. Yeah. Is that the right way to say it? Yes. S-canned. So what happened was we ended up back-channeling two friends inside of Google. And it took about 3.5 weeks to get an answer to this. But what ended up happening is big box stores submit into Google, and a lot of us don't know this, but here's how it goes down: an Excel spreadsheet of all of their locations. Really, if you're a chain or a franchise, you do the same thing. And that Excel spreadsheet has all of the columns like address, hours, link, phone number, zip code for all of your locations. Got it? Good. So what ended up happening, and Google ended up admitting this to us, our friends at Google, whoever uploaded the Excel spreadsheet, this is the search results problem, right? If you entered your zip code and you entered that company's name, you'd only see their competitors. So whatever intern at Google uploads the Excel spreadsheet for franchises and big box stores, they uploaded the competitors twice. Once into our client's location, and the second time into their competitor's location. So only the competitor's results were being shown. That took 3 weeks to figure out, and it all started with a beer at SMX West. Oh, update. That whole team is no longer there. They got S-canned. It took too long. 9 months, a year to solve that problem. That big box store wasn't interested in waiting around any longer for that team. Really sad story, but at least the kids are still in school. Kids probably even have graduated by now. You know, I've been keeping a close eye on developing trends as you ask me to, and to make sure that I report back to you. But I got one thing that I wanted to talk with you about. Do new internet things or technology or advancements now have shorter shelf life? Because it feels to me like Facebook Live is feeling like a bit tired by now, right? Like, I get Facebook Live notifications. I got one right before I came into the studio, but I don't even look anymore. And maybe about 6 months or a year ago, I would look, I'd make a comment, I'd congratulate people for using the tool and the platform to help advance their business. But now it's kind of a foregone conclusion, right? So how do companies, and yours also, how do you add another log onto the fire to keep your users fired up about your developments in your product or service? Always be thinking about what is next. How do you add a new piece, a new wrinkle, a new tool that makes your customers even more effective? Facebook Live is in desperate need of that right now. It's probably been a good 5 months, I would say, since Facebook Live introduced split screens to the videos where you can interview somebody else remotely. I mean, that's cool and all, but what's next? Where does this thing go? And aren't they going to, like you heard from Greg Jarboe when he joined us on the podcast just a couple of episodes ago, be providing tools for creators to be even do to be able to do even cooler things? I actually think that when you have a product roadmap, you should be planning out those cool things and roll them out way before your last iteration becomes boring, right? Plan that out, roll it out, keep the excitement going, add a new log onto the fire, and you'll keep people around to use that tool. All right, let's spend a few moments and talk about Snapchat. TechCrunch is reporting that nerdy Google has failed its social time in and time again. Literally, I can't tell you how many Google-born products or services have turned into Google Glass, right? Absolute waste. Google Plus had so much potential. They pumped so much traffic my way. And me and a lot of my friends early on were adopters. You should always be an early adopter. If the platform dies out, it's still okay, because if you're an early adopter, you can ride that wave. There are people that come up to me all the time that talk about Google Plus and where they found me. But I think it's really interesting that you're seeing that nerdy Google failed its social a bunch of times, and it considered buying teen sensation Snapchat. Now, the search giant held informal talks with Snap and floated an offer of, and this is in 2016, $30 billion before Snap's last funding round and just before its IPO this year. That offer was apparently an open secret inside of Snap and was on the table after the IPO. Now, when the IPO came out, you may remember on this very podcast, and I'm not going to do a Google search on it, to maybe Christo wants to, but this feels like a lot of work. Christo, if you could figure out while I'm doing this what podcast episode, Snapchat's IPO. And so let me give you the lowdown here, because it's actually really interesting. I told you, as a listener of this podcast, that I wasn't investing in Snapchat. And the reason I wasn't is because Snapchat has some serious concerns about its authenticity and its numbers. And I also had problems with short format video, because everybody is moving and migrating, like you're seeing right now with Instagram and Twitter, that started off with short formats into longer formats, right? And that Snapchat also had a problem with someone inside of Snapchat talking about how Snapchat was cooking their audience metric numbers. Well, so I said, sit back and wait until Snapchat and it go tell it IPOs, and you're going to see that the market will provide a correction inside of the price that Snapchat is going for. There's going to be a drop in that price, and then the real price is going to show up, because the beginning price is just their offer. And now that Christo just finished his crack reporter work, episode 57, wirebuzz.com/57. It's really about censorship, bad data, and the future of video in 2017. But I do talk about in this podcast that a former Snapchat employee claims that the company has been faking growth numbers to boost its value in their IPO. Well, I saw this story that it goes on from TechCrunch, and here it goes. But Snap's notoriously independent CEO, Evan Spiegel, has apparently showed no interest in selling out to Google or anyone else. And that's despite the startup's market cap slipping from what Facebook was willing to pay, $30 billion, to around $15 billion after soaring as high as $30 billion when the IPO day hit in May, right? Hindsight is always 20/20, but looking back now, Evan Spiegel would have been smart to take the $30 billion that Google was offering, go put his ass on the beach. Instead, Snap has lost half its value, hence the name. Oh, Snap. All right, so music is really interesting. I'm obsessed with how people learn today. And particularly how we prefer to learn. And that I think that something that's happening inside of the psyche of all of us is closer to what I've grown up with. I've shared with you in the past that I was I struggled as a kid with multiple learning disabilities. And one of those disabilities was ADD. But I'm starting to notice that everybody has developed a type of ADD, a trained type of ADD from their digital devices and the alerts and the notifications and the emails and the texts that come through and the emojis. And anytime you hear a text message sound, it pulls your attention from a prospect or from your boss to your device. And the next thing you know, it's just a trained attention disorder that comes from all of these smart devices. Well, how does that change the way you and I better educate in order to convince and convert, right? If people can't hold their attention span and you're giving them text to read, well, you should really be concerned about how many frequent interruptions come up along the way. But video is a beast. It pulls your attention onto the screen. It allows you to keep being stimulated. And before you know it, just like the example of the enchilada, you get through the critical material, you process information 60,000 times faster with video, and because of that, you're ready to make a purchase decision or ready to go on emotionally to look for more information about that product or service. If you want to be a great marketer, you've got to be a great video marketer, because that's where this road is all headed. It's about attention hack and how we get into people's minds, pull them through a buyer's journey, stimulate their brain to discover and have the emotional connections that it takes in order to make a purchase decision. It's so important that as you're thinking about it, I want you to be thinking about how do I hold people's attention. And then I saw this article, and I might have shared it with you in the past, but it's so important. I felt like I need to bring it up again, because the attention span in music has changed. For the last 30 years, there really has been a big migration. Look, one of the coolest things that I've seen in a long time is a researcher that studied popular music and the compositional practices and how they've changed in the last 30 years. And he studied 303 U.S. top 100 songs from 1986 to 2015 and analyzed five parameters: number of words in the title, the main tempo, time before the voice enters, right? And time before the title is mentioned. And also, does it have a self-focused lyrical style? And what they discovered is popular music has been changing in the way that favors attention-grabbing tactics, right? So I saw that in 1986, in this study, it took 22 seconds on average for the top 10 songs to get to the lyrics, 22 seconds. And in 2015, people would get to the main, would get to the lyrics within 5 seconds. Now, that's not me saying to you, get to your point within 5 seconds on your video, but you've got to get very conscious about how you hook people in that first 5 seconds. Because if you can hook people in that first 5 seconds, just like popular music, you'll hold their attention span. And when you've got their attention span, you can reel them right through the buyer's journey. A lot you can learn. I will make sure that this article appears on the show notes page, because it is absolutely spot on fabulous. It correlates with the attention span of today's audience and how marketers need to be adjusting in order to be playing attention economy and bring people through to conversion. Really, really smart. All right, so we got a question in this week, and it's about green screens, when to use it, when not to use it. And I think it's a really good question for this forum. Very often people are approaching us asking us to create a green screen. I think maybe the green screen might be like, hey, Todd, we'd like to do a green screen shoot where we can fill in the blank, put it in the back, and kind of cut corners. And many people, when they are first met with video marketing, come with the approach of, let's put this in the background as a green screen, but I want to have a little bit of conversation for you. And I have invited Christopher Janelle, who's our director of ops, to talk with me about green screens, the value of it, because ultimately what we want to do is we want to give you when to use it, when not to use it, and how to guide yourself through your own business's video choices to know the power of a green screen, but also on the other side of the coin, how do green screens hurt your overall production value and how it's received in the minds of your viewers. So to join me, Christopher Janelle's on the podcast. Hey, Christopher.
Hey, how are you doing, Todd?
Pretty good, man. So this topic comes up all the time. People want to talk about green screens. It happened again this morning. Generally, my thoughts are, I think it takes away from the overall production value. It creates an air of inauthenticity. What do you think about green screens?
I kind of feel the same way for pretty much all of our clients. I would shy away from ever using green screen.
We did over 1,000 videos last year. Maybe one or two were green screened.
And I think most of that time is because we were more or less, pushed in that direction by the client. It was something that they really wanted to do. Or for some reason, we felt it, could have been the right choice. Green screen is typically not an easy thing to do, and it's definitely not an easy thing to do correctly.
But that's not why we don't recommend it. Like, we have enough skills in-house to pull it off at a very high level.
Yeah, we can definitely do it, and we can do it well. But I think a lot of clients that we work with or a lot of businesses, they come in kind of novice and green, if you will. And they think that green screen technology is just like a kind of you pop it up and then you look at the computer and there it is. A magical background is back there. And it's really not that way. It takes a lot of specific lighting. It takes a lot of specific equipment. And that's just to capture a subject – multiple subjects on camera in front of the green screen. Then you bring it into post-production, and there's a whole nother layer of keying it and actually incorporating the background that's not so simple. So I think a lot of people see it on TV or they hear about it in movies, and they think, oh, we can do that. That's a simple thing. You're a video production company. Let's just do that. And it's usually money allocated to a technique that we could be better served filming on location with them, using that budget that we would spend on producing a high quality green screen asset. But now let's show your facilities. Let's show your people. Let's show something real that people can connect with.
And this is where we come back to authenticity. When a business is trying to convince a prospect that they're the right one for their business, the green screen already looks inauthentic. Everybody knows that your office does not look like the Taj Mahal, right? They already know that. So why go out and create a confusing or an inauthentic background? By the way, backgrounds, when done right, are so awesome. And I always want to make sure that people aren't obsessed with that green screen etching that goes around the subject's head and their jacket and down their arm and their hands as they're talking. I always want to make sure that somebody watching just listens to the message and the visual demonstrations that we're providing. Most people should be showing in their business videos their authentic business workspace, because that's where all the magic happens. And when you hide that, your audience knows you're hiding something.
Yeah, we have a couple clients who wanted to consult with us on doing, can you give us some instructions on how we can do some simple green screen videos in our office? And we were like, well, why are you, we kind of lead in through a series of questions. Well, why green screen? Oh, well, we want to put our logo, behind us or beside us as we're speaking. Well, why? How about you just print a sign or a banner with your logo on it and stand in front of that? It's a much simpler solution to achieve the same goal, and you'll spend less time, less energy, less effort, and it will look that much better for being real.
Or you just add the logo as a bug in the bottom right corner, use it on your open and your close, and you've got all bases covered. you know, some marketers look at it like they've got to keep their logo up there the whole time because that's branding.
Yeah, and it could be other simple things. Like we've seen videos that people produce and they shoot it on green screen and they replace the background with white. And I'm like, why would you shoot on green screen to just change the color of the background? Why wouldn't you just shoot against that color? It looks a whole lot more natural. And once again, it's a much simpler execution for achieving the same thing. So we've seen a lot of silly things out there when it comes to green screen. A lot of the times, green screen can be used as a novelty, as something funny or jokey.
Like when we did the Brady Bunch video for the clients.
Yeah, we did a Brady Bunch parody video for some clients, and that we intentionally shot on green screen because we wanted to pull in photos of the Brady Bunch house and Brady Bunch atmosphere. And it was funny. It wasn't meant to look
authentic.
It was meant as kind of a joke, as a tool to make the audience laugh. A lot of the times, green screen is best used if you're in broadcast news and you're delivering the weather. Absolutely. Or if you're on a high cost, you know, special effects driven production in Hollywood. And our clients don't typically fall into either one of those categories. So some other scenario, a natural environment, is usually the best fit for them.
Beautiful. Well, he's Christopher Janelle. I hope that gives you a good overview on business videos, which is really what our audience is interested in, and where to use and where not to use green screen. And I'm really seeing this trend that as more people are getting into video marketing, because they're seeing this video gold rush going on, and they're production people, not necessarily marketers, and they end up creating these studios where they have a green screen studio and they crank out videos all the time. That is a really low quality way to represent your company. And before we get off the topic of video vendors and green screens and all this, look, there are three types of video vendors that I don't think help businesses very much with their videos. The first one is, and this is what people do, they like price shop against these three people. And I'm not in any of these groups, but the first one is a kid with camera, right? Because when somebody's looking for a videographer, what they're really doing is they're saying to themselves, who do I know that has a camera, right? So they look for, oh, that kid has a camera, but everybody's got a camera nowadays. The next thing they look for is like a wedding videographer. Well, they've got a camera and they know how to shoot and they create great wedding videos, right? And then the third type of person is maybe a television production person. Now, I want to warn you about all of these, because what you end up doing when you're shopping for the right video creator is you start price checking these three groups against each other: the kid with camera, the wedding videographer, and of course, the television production guy. And the problem with this is price is not the most important element that you should have in mind when you're looking for who can create your videos. Businesses, they don't need to do it on the right price. They need a video that creates results. And the kid with camera, the wedding videographer, and the television production person, none of them can create results online with your video. In fact, of those three, which has the most experience online? It's the kid with camera, because the kid lives online, goes to YouTube, watches videos, but they would never be the first person you would hire. You'd only hire them if you don't have any money. If your business needs tangible business results, and in the adult world, that's called return on investment, right? ROI. If your business needs ROI with your videos, you have to go to a digital marketer that specializes in video. And the reason is most people, they don't understand that video is, they think video is a tactic like search or social or email or sales, right? But the reality is video isn't a tactic. Video is the best amplifier of every one of those tactics. Video is like pouring gasoline on a fire, right? It amplifies the results in search, in social, in email, in traffic, and in sales. And you'll never get the true potential or results we call in the adult world ROI from videos that are created from people that don't live and dominate the digital space. Be cautious when you're looking for a video creator because everybody today has a camera. Be thinking about who can create the right result. And if you want to get access to my secrets on how to generate ROI, how to guarantee that your videos get ROI, we've created a 5-part mini course featuring yours truly smiling into the camera, and I'm sharing my biggest tips and tricks, and you can get access to that 5-part mini series. It's a mini series. It's a little bit shorter than Roots. Each video is like 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 11 minutes is the longest one. You can get access at wirebuzz.com/ROI. That's like return on investment. All right. Hey, if you want to get access to all of the articles that I referenced, the images that I talked about, make sure you go to the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/110. That's numeric. It's wirebuzz.com/110. Got it? Good. Listen, if this podcast episode was valuable to you, and I know it was, we covered a lot of territory that you can use, like the LinkedIn native upload, right? That right there is a tangible business tactic that you could do right now to generate money. So if that's valuable to you, if it's valuable to somebody in your office, share this podcast to them and share it with anybody that you're rooting for. Go up to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play and subscribe, and we'll make sure that each and every episode gets sent directly to you. The next thing you should be doing is leaving a really honest rating and review. As Gary Vee would say, if you want to 1-star this shit, fine. But if you want to 5-star it, even better, right? So make sure we look at everything. Make sure you share your candid feedback, and we'll become better marketers in the process. And we will continue to do what we do best. Look for the latest news in video marketing, synthesize it, show you how you can use it for tangible business results so you can start hockey sticking your return on investment. All right. So I'm going to be, I'm going to be traveling. As you can imagine, I never really stop. This week, the American Marketing Association keynote speech, and I'll be updating you on that. And as I go to Michigan, where I absolutely love in the Midwest, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles. In LA, everything glitters, but has very little substance. In Michigan, everything has substance, but very little glitter. I much prefer that experience. I'm going to be creating some great videos while I'm there. If any of you have any questions, any digital marketing, any business or video marketing questions that you want asked, please submit them my way, wirebuzz.com/pitch, and I will answer them in video, and I'll also answer them right here on this podcast. All right, that's it for me and Christo. We are peaced out, and we wish you a very productive, very profitable week. And we'll look forward to seeing you right back here on Video Marketing Mastery.